And I'd like to start with a poem that we all know, but I just want to remind us of it, because I think it's something that we need to remind ourselves for all children, both children with physical disabilities and children who are physically able. Children learn what they live. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If children live with hostility, they learn to fight. If children live with ridicule, they learn to be shy. If children live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If children live with tolerance, they learn to be patient. If children live with encouragement, they learn to be confident. Yeah. If children live with praise, they learn to appreciate. If children live with fairness, they learn justice. If children live with security, they have faith. If children live with approval, they learn to like themselves. If children live with acceptance and friendship, they learn to find love in the world. I'd like to start this evening's session with a prayer, if you don't mind joining me. Loving God, be with us here this evening, that we may think and share carefully in love about those children and people in our society who have disabilities or are close to people with disabilities and are affected by those disabilities. Help us to think how to build a world in which all of us fully love and respect one another, and give us the power to do so from this day forward. Amen. Amen. All of us have experiences of one kind or another with disabilities. I think it's important to realize that all of us have disabilities of one kind or another. And some disabilities are easy to see, some disabilities are deeply hidden, but that we all have disabilities. We're all similar in many ways, but we're all different in some ways. And I'd like to begin our thinking together tonight by sharing some of our memories and some of our experiences with one another in smaller groups, in groups of three people. Because I think that in doing so, we begin to remind ourselves of some of our own feelings and some of our emotions and some of our past experiences, so that then when we begin to think together about how children and families are affected by disabilities, that we can also think more clearly about what we as adults, as teachers, as people living in the world with children who have disabilities, how we can act powerfully to enable all children to grow up into the kind of people that their fullest potential will allow them to be. I was teaching once, and there was a child who was hydrocephalic in my class. That means, for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a child who has water, basically, on their brain, an enlarged head. And I didn't have a lot of experience with this, but I worked with that child in a preschool setting so that that child felt empowered in the whole community, changed basically in their attitude towards that child. But to think about an experience you've had with a child who has a handicap and what that experience was like for the child and for other children around and what you did in that situation.
Okay. Did it not have to be as an adult, or could it be as a child?
Well, I mean, if one doesn't readily come to mind, then think of an experience with an adult with a handicap.
I mean, but as a child with another child.
I think probably it would be as an adult, and most of us will remember those experiences, but perhaps not. The idea is to just get our thinking started and to recall some of our feelings and emotions and experience. Okay, I'd like to start by doing some thinking together about how people are hurt by disabilities. And I don't mean so much the disabilities themselves, but the effects that it has socially and within our society, how people with disabilities are affected. And I'd like to think, and I'm thinking of adversely affected at this point, and I'd like to think first about... We may have to run for a... This is not going to work, is it?
It's kind of
could, wait, would somebody be willing to run to the fireside room and get me a dry marker that works?
Just right next
door.
Yeah, it's the one just right next door, where Carl is working. I should have checked first. I'd like to just do some thinking about...
One more, there's one other one you could...
No, this one is completely dry.
It's completely dry.
Yeah. Not black one.
Black one started.
Well... Mm-hmm. We'll try. Okay. But I think we can brainstorm about these simultaneously, but I'd like to think a little bit about the families of children with disabilities. That's my abbreviation for children. That's my abbreviation for with.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's my abbreviation for with, too.
And the children, C-H-E-N.
C-H-R-N? Oh, sorry. Is that going to be confusing?
They only have one that Carla's using.
Jeez, there were like five boxes.
Three boxes over there.
Yeah.
Boxes?
Boxes.
Yeah. Oh, where are they?
Colors.
Boxes.
I don't know if they were.
That one's where
they were lambs.
Would you mind
Shannon,
to
there's
take
a green one.
Let's send somebody that knows what they're looking for.
Are those dry markers?
Yeah.
What is it supposed to be? A certain kind?
Okay. And then I'd like to think about children without disabilities. Mm-hmm. Without disabilities that are visible.
With disabilities, but they're not visible?
No, I'm thinking of what we would consider as able children.
Okay.
But I think able children are also adversely affected in the same... For example, by some of the ways in which children with disabilities are responded to, or how children without disabilities are sheltered from that, or don't learn about it, or aren't given correct information. I mean, I think there's a variety of ways in which children without disabilities are also adversely affected.
Lot.
We got one anyway.
There
was one on
there
the
was
shelf. It's great.
One. Look at that.
We just really wanted to send you out of the room.
Yeah. Yeah, I said something.
would you mind if I borrowed your watch?
No, go ahead. It's 7:15. You're halfway through.
Okay, all right. So let's just think a little bit about this. And then after this, I want to think about what our goals for children are. And then having thought about this, to think together about what we want to do vis-a-vis the whole thing of prejudice against children with disabilities. So let's just think about, I mean, how are we as a community in these different categories adversely affected?
You mean,
are
like,
we
draw,
affected
like,
or are
goals
they affected?
Yeah.
Both. Well, in this category, it would be the children themselves. In this category, it would be the families. And in this category, it would be the children without the disabilities. But how are they adversely affected by the prejudice against people with disabilities?
Children with disabilities are always on the lowest rung of the ladder. And there, thanks be to God, there are a certain percentage of people in this world who just have this element of compassion. And it's because of them and because of children with disabilities' parents that we have anything at all. As you know, we have any laws, we have anything. You know, the fact that we have to have laws to have opportunities for children with disabilities is in the first place an offensive thing to me, but that's the only way that anything ever happens. And so we have to pass laws to get these children into school. But I'm thinking really specifically of the fact that in Oregon, when Measure 5 passed and they started making cuts in state budgets, one of the first things that went was early intervention for handicapped children. Now, we have people here that need more help and really have an opportunity to go far in life if they're given a great extra measure of help. But it does require that extra measure of help, or else they're just not going to be able to do that. And so where do they make cuts? And we could stand to have a hole in the highway, but that's not where the compassion level is for the average person, unfortunately.
Ignored.
Made fun of.
Yeah.
Lonely, very lonely.
Lonely. Made fun of.
there's a tremendous amount of fear of handicapped people. It's like people, there's so much ignorance. It's unbelievable. And people, many adults, I mean, I see it worse, much worse in adults than children. The children learn to fear from their parents. But there is this thing about that is contagious. It's amazing.
Low esteem.
If they're going to, parents are afraid that if their children are around handicapped children, that somehow that maybe their next child's going to be handicapped. I mean, it's just this. It goes way beyond common sense, and it isn't on a conscious level many, many times. I mean, they would be shocked if you told them that, but that's the truth.
Sorry?
Mixed up?
The children are separated many times from, like in the schools, they're put in a room all by themselves, out of the hall.
Where they learn each other's bad habits.
Or even from their parents.
She learns bad habits from normal parents.
Are we doing all three at once?
We are doing all three at once, okay?
I know that, I was thinking about family.
I'm sorry, insurance unaccepted?
Unaccepted, yeah. Okay. I had have an uncle and aunt who had a son just whatever a few months younger than I, who was deaf and also mentally handicapped. And the issue there was how long could they deal with him within their family without could be very violent. And so as he grew up and grew stronger, he became more and more difficult to control, and yet the guilt of putting him into an institution was very difficult. But it was, you know, it was destroying the family. And here is, you know, there was a big question of what to do. They eventually did put him in an institution. But you know, just that problem. How do you make that kind of judgment?
The big thing too about families that have children with disabilities is that it tears the families apart in a high percentage of cases. Because you have to have two people that can handle it, and very often you don't.
If you have a child, a handicapped child born to a set of parents, the statistics used to be, you know, something like 80% divorce rate.
I lived with this family for a year.
Is that a current statistic?
She may not be current.
I expect it's probably higher.
It's probably higher.
This is when she was in preschool.
Yeah, this was
a high percentage of divorce.
Yeah, 80.
Because when you consider that the divorce rate is 50% anyway,
yeah.
You know, and people, and the ordinary stresses on people. One of the things, the ordinary stresses on ordinary families is financial, and children with disabilities often, there's tremendous financial stress too. And then added to that, you have usually a situation where the child needs a lot of care, and then the family needs more money rather than less, and mom can't go to work because she has to take care of the kid, and it's just terribly stressful on families.
Feel guilty.
The parents.
Yes. And other children in a family sometimes feel left out.
Because the attention is given to the handicap.
Are you talking about in a school setting or outside of the school setting or?
In general.
one of the things that bothers me the most is that, you know, it's just so unfair to the child, you know, but then, I mean, that's life. Life isn't fair, but it's just so unfair to the child. I mean, I think about her and I just think, you know, she didn't do one thing to ask for this, and yet it's like people blame the handicapped person. The handicapped person's the one who has to do all the suffering, it seems like, you know. And I mean, they didn't do one thing. They were just born into this world and conceived like anybody else, you know. And yet, like,
do you
it's
think
their
she
fault.
Knows that, though? Does she seem to feel that she's not?
Well, Linda is very, very verbal, so she can't talk about her feelings. Her speaking ability is limited.
Mm-hmm.
So, but believe me, she knows.
She wants to do whatever normal kids do, just with a passion. Anything they do, she wants to do. She wants to take, you know, ballet lessons like her sister. Mm-hmm.
She wants to play the piano.
She wants to play the piano. Mm-hmm. Any kids that play, she wants to join in, and, you know, even though she may not be able to do it the right way,
she knows a lot.
She still wants to do it.
And you tell her anything once, and she's got it. She doesn't forget. And yet, that's one of the mysteries and amazing things to be about retardation. I mean, you know, she's limited a lot, and yet she's so smart. You know, it's just it's crazy.
Is she in a special school?
No, she's mainstream.
Mainstream.
And she's in a normal classroom, but she has a full-time aide. And she wouldn't be able to operate without the aide.
So in some sense, children are can be misunderstood. As well,
well
not fully
but
understood.
I think the thing that sets her apart is her inability to speak well, to communicate in a regular conversation. Most of her speech is canned sentences, and you can teach her to say anything. She's lazy about articulation, but she understands everything. She knows the Lord's Prayer, but you wouldn't be able to probably understand it. You catch a word here and there, but she's saying it all, but she's lazy about it. But I mean, if you try to have a normal conversation, she isn't conversational because she just isn't that good with her speech. It's the hardest, last thing children learn and the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
I always just monopolize, but I'll just say one more thing. I like the analogy with a retarded person, or at least in her case, I think about little children who are running down a road or across a field or something, and it's full of ditches. And the normal little children can run, and when they come to the ditch, they just jump over it. And they go on the next, and they jump over that. And Linda has to slowly crawl down one side, go across the ditch, and crawl up the other. And so subsequently, as time goes along, she just gets further and further behind. And they're just dashing across this field and jumping the ditches, and she's just going up. And it isn't that she isn't going to get there. It takes her a long time. But what happens with that, those key learning years, is that because the progress is slower, and eventually she runs out of time. And so, you know, but she'll always progress just as we always. We could still learn. But it's just that she runs out of time in terms of, you know.
Yeah, which would reinforce some of the other things, because the peer interaction was changed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what's happened
yeah.
now in middle school, that the kids are no longer, they're too embarrassed to be friends with her now. It's just everything.
Are there any others? Or
Alan has something to say, but he's...
Yeah, it's a long sentence.
Getting it out. Back to children without disabilities, I think they tend to walk around people who are disabled and those are all out of fear and ignorance and everything else, but I think they tend to not want to be involved with them. I think children without tend to not want to be.
There's a certain percentage of children who are normal who will take advantage of the...
Yeah, or take advantage of children with limitations.
And there's also a certain percentage of amazing children who don't care what other people think and are drawn to these kind of people.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Good.
Are you bored to death? You probably really do have to go.
I think that there may be a way in which, too, children without disabilities get a false sense of their...
Thank you.
Jeff, can you understand some of it?
I'm not sure. I thought the first part was, it seemed to be a misconception of the state gave some opinion about you. Here it says his hip was bad. His hip was bad from carrying you. The first part said one earlier. Oh, it's okay. Yeah, okay. The state said it was bad for. The state told his mom that it was bad for her to carry him. Is that it? Yeah, so I mean, talk about nurture, you know, I mean, here's the...
Oh,
geez. So she shouldn't carry, that's what the state said.
Yeah.
I've been in...
When you were little,
yeah, right. Did she obey the state? Some, yeah.
Okay, let's just think for a minute about what are our goals for children? Our goals for children are, I think, probably all the same, our bottom line goals. But let's just articulate them so that we have them in front of us. What are our goals for children?
Chalk,
because I'd like to move
them
to the board at the same time.
Would they self-acceptance, be able to know who they are and be contented
understanding.
With
I'm going to just put it down
here
at the bottom. Sorry, what did you say, Jeff?
To be able to accept themselves for who they are, both the positive and the negative, and be happy with who they are.
So children be self-accepting. What else do we want for our children?
To get a normal environment. Have a normal environment.
There you go.
Oh.
No, not
at all.
Yeah.
To have a normal environment. Okay.
Exclamation mark.
What else?
To feel loved by others.
Okay, to feel loved.
They need to learn compassion.
I think to be educated. I think the goal is for children. I think we want them to learn and be fully educated, fully to the full capacity.
Well, goals for normal children.
Not live with parents who are prejudiced.
Is to eventually be self-sufficient. You know, that's the ultimate goal,
right,
is to have your child self-sufficient. But if you have a handicapped child, depending on what the handicap is, that kind of throws a screw in the works.
Yeah, for sure.
To be accepted.
I think to be able to know their own boundaries and be able to take risks, you know, to without being afraid.
Job.
Okay.
A job.
Yeah. Able to take risks and get a job.
Just want them out of the home.
Any other goals we have for our children? We said to be self-accepting, to have a normal environment, to feel loved, to learn compassion, to be fully educated, to be self-sufficient, to be accepted, to be able to take risks, knowing your own boundaries, and to get a job. Do we have any other goals for our children?
To have access to whatever equipment or adaptive. Devices, communication equipment, wheelchairs, transportation that comes up.
Access to necessary, can I just say equipment?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, keeping in mind all of these things, I'm going to move this so they can still hear us.
I hope there's someone who starts to name it.
Oh, yeah, they might not own them.
We'll have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have total control over this system.
Okay, then what can we do?
I think part of it goes back to what Sharon said about the environment. I mean, giving the kind of environment where these kind of things can take place. Is that the kind of thing you mean, or you mean
more
specific?
Sure, absolutely. So let's think. Should we think again? Why don't we think again in terms of the three categories? Because we're probably going to be working on all at the same time, and certainly, I think particularly for this part, we obviously have to deal with the children who have the disabilities themselves and what we can do to support them. But the family is the centerpiece of the support system for that child. So I think if we're thinking fundamentally, we have to think about how we can support families. And then, of course, and then the other thing is that any children with disabilities find the greatest prejudice coming from people who without disabilities. And so what can we do vis-a-vis these children who grow into adults so that they become people who do fully love and respect all people, including people with disabilities? So let's think in terms of these three categories so that we can think, so we are really thinking holistically and fundamentally about addressing this problem.
One thing that I think is keep after the legislature, she said.
Bye-bye.
I was thinking to give a child the freedom to fail. Yeah. You know, the freedom to try something and fail. And I think that's especially true, would be more true with children with disabilities. You know, there's that fear. You don't want to give that. To allow that opportunity for fear it's going to be too shattering or something, but in the sense that with any person that's an important growing and try again, of course, not be shattered and destroyed by it.
Okay, so give children the freedom to fail. And I think after the state legislature, I mean, we're doing that on behalf of the families as well.
Maybe fail as well. No, she said
Good counseling for families.
Counseling for families.
Yeah.
Great.
One of the things that I think is really good is if they can get more stuff on television. Unfortunately, there's
better education.
Because the thing of it is, in our system, it's unfortunately that people can always change the channel. So you've always got the problem of people that aren't interested are not going to look. But, you know, for instance, this Life Goes On show that's been on now for a couple of years with Chris Burke, this Down syndrome guy who's one of the members of the family, just in a normal family setting, has been so healthy. And the show has been good enough to where people want to watch that show, just want to watch that show. Now, you know, what we need now is a show with someone with a wheelchair in a wheelchair. It's just a normal family and the problems they face. And, I mean, they've dealt with the problems. Sometimes it's not realistic, obviously. I mean, he's an extremely high-level Downs person. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, they have dealt head-on with a lot of issues. That's what they need. I mean, we just need to make these people part of our normal.
And so what is the goal of the better? I mean, better TV programming will do what?
Expose handicapped people to the public.
Yeah. It would
make aware
fear and ignorance.
And raise awareness of the fact that these are people too. And, you know, I think that to think that they don't deserve acceptance is, you know, so insulting.
So it would increase respect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or at least just most people just don't get exposure. It's lack of exposure. Mm-hmm. Still, it's not percentage of people that are exposed. We certainly were, as Shannon had mentioned, and you know, I mean, we had no handicapped people in either of our families, and so we really had no experience.
And I think as parents, that means giving your children a chance. I mean, that's one of the, you know, wonderful things of having an Alan and Sharon here, is to give children, as parents, to give children an experience of meeting them and talking with them.
For families, it's respite support. Pretty critical.
Very, very critical.
I'm sorry?
Respite support for parents.
Respite care is a big issue.
Particularly if you're caring for one of your children for a lifetime, you know, if that's a big thing.
But you know, you can't, that's another issue too, because it's only your lifetime and the child is probably going to live after you. So you need to make provisions for that.
What does that mean? I mean, what kind of support
that
does the family need?
That these people have to be given a future so they can have a life, because we're not going to live forever.
Respite care, though, is mostly, you know, having a place to stay for a while during the day so that you can make your own things.
So you would say security after the death of the family.
I'm saying that something that didn't go under here, under this families, the things that happen to families with disabilities, is that children, I think that the health classes at school do a whole lot better job than they used to in trying to at least expose kids to the kinds of things that they might expect. But, you know, if we put a tremendous fear in everybody about what could happen to them when they decided to have a baby, a lot of people probably wouldn't have babies, etc., you know. And so we're real ignorant about that, and we're all Pollyannas, and we certainly, well, we're not all. There are some people smart enough to have some fear, but I certainly wasn't among them. And, you know, you just don't, you never think anything's like that's going to happen to you. Okay, so families aren't prepared, number one. But if it does happen to them, their lives are totally, totally changed. Yeah. Totally changed. And people, whether they talk about it or not, plan on having their kids, raising them up, and going on with their lives. That's kind of that's the plan. Most people that are sitting here that are older, their kids are out in the world somewhere. You know, and that doesn't, if you have a handicapped child, suddenly this is totally blown apart, and you don't know what your future's going to be like, and there's just a whole bunch of things that come into that. Mm-hmm. And so what these people need to be, as I mentioned, is to have a future so that you can have a future too. And so that they can have a life that isn't totally dependent upon you, because as I said, you're not going to be here forever. So it's not just, it's for both of your sakes, your sake and their sake. Yeah. But handicapped people are just like, you know, your normal children get up to be graduating from high school and they just look forward so much to leaving home. I mean, that's a big thing, and a big thing of independence. Handicapped people are the same way. And they, I mean, why not? You know, and they get out and they grow so much when they get away from their family. You can't truly grow up until you leave home, you know? And it's just the same thing with handicapped people. So if they're going to leave home, then there's got to be a place for them to go to that's acceptable to the family. And that's with her. Going to be a big thing for us, because the places they have are, you know, that's a big worry. Big worry.
And some money.
And money.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And right now it would be something like SSI, which they don't allow you to even buy them clothes. It means they have to be, you know, so like disability. And like in her case, if she was out and she was receiving that, I mean, if she gets in, you can't even buy them clothes. You know, they have to go around in rags because that's about all the money would buy. You know, secondhand clothes or pants that are too short or something like that. I mean, they just get real offended by this. But, you know, that's what they have to live on. They can't get that when they're adults. Mm-hmm. And Medicaid and stuff like that. Uh-huh. Of course, a lot of doctors aren't even taking Medicaid patients anymore. So, I mean, they're definitely citizens are without
so
privilege.
adequate medical care as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a lesbian, so I think nursing homes would take them.
Would you want to put your normal child in a nursing home?
No,
well,
but I just
people,
mean as
you know,
a last resort.
And people say things to me, and I say, would you do this with your normal child? I mean, somebody asked me once, why didn't you institutionalize her? Would you want to put your normal child in a nursing home? Do you think I love her less, or that she's less human to me? She's just a person too, and I love her just like a normal child.
Yeah, speaking of medical insurance, it's just like most companies won't accept her on medical insurance, even though after she had her open heart surgery, she's the healthiest one in the family. She never gets sick, or if she does, it's not very long. But all the medical insurance company, including AID Association for Lutherans, won't accept her because the actuary tables say that Down's kids have such and such and such a problem.
Well, insurance companies will use any excuse to not cover.
Statistically, it's not smart.
But this, the books are very old, and what they say is 50% of them have heart defects, and that's true. It just so happens. And so if they take on a baby, you know, then the chances are 50% they're going to have to spend a whole lot of money to have that.
$30,000.
It's just that in her case, we get phone calls all the time because we have two businesses that are our own businesses at home. And so we're always getting these phone calls. This insurance can be blah, 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 blah. And I always say, do you cover Down syndrome children? Well, no. Well, I don't think we need to talk then. You know, it goes on all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just ignorance and another excuse to not cover. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Under children without disabilities, maybe children's books, different
children's books. Yes, that's excellent. And some of those books have been coming out the last 3 years. It's great.
I mean, seeing it on TV that there are handicapped people and seeing that, and in books and so on and so forth, it exposes the public.
Mm-hmm. We've seen better books as a whole. I mean, I'm a teacher, and all the books have white. Normal children, and they don't have black children or Indian children. They're all white children with wonderful families with a mom and dad and everything. Mm-hmm. Realistic at all.
Mm-hmm. And over here, if we're talking about fear and ignorance on both the part of the child and of the parents, and here's it's fear as well, we somehow need to be able to really talk to children and confront them and to help them dispel their fears or to deal with their fears, right?
Well, it's just, you know, humankind, we tend to be selfish, you know, let's face it, and that's the reason we have to pass laws to get things for disabled people and a lot of other oppressed people, you know. And so parents would just rather not deal with it, and if they did, if it comes out of their taxes, then they can't do anything about it. But otherwise, they're just not going to. It's easier to just ignore it.
But I think the reality for us is that, I mean, those of us who are here at Holden are primarily people of faith. Mm-hmm. And I think that our Christian faith and our theology speaks to us about what we do vis-a-vis all people in our society. And I think that when we take our faith seriously and when we take our theology seriously, then we take responsibility for each other more seriously. And if that is true, then I think that every one of us in this room who have a real concern for all children and a real concern for all people in our society, particularly those who don't have everything coming to them easily, that we then have a responsibility to support children and families in the best way we know how. And it seems to me that some of the things that we're talking about are things that we can do on a one-to-one level. A lot of these things are things that we can do in an advocacy kind of mode, vis-a-vis our state legislatures or our national legislature.
Letter writing.
And that some of these things are things that we can do collectively as a congregation. I mean, a lot of these ideas are ideas that each one of us can take back to our home church